Hello and welcome to Breaking Geek Career, the podcast, the premier podcast of LRM Online. I'm your host, Brendan Jones, and this week we got the usual crew. We got your Nick Dolls and your Joseph Jammer Medinas. Gentlemen, how's it going?
Pretty good.
As good as things can be, considering, you know, the life circumstances that we are currently going through. We'll talk about, should we just talk about it now? Just fucking jump right into it. No lube, nothing. Just go dive in.
Do it.
It's probably an inappropriate way to talk about this. Considering
I was about to say, if you want to jump from no lube into the horrific news that you'd like to discuss, I was going to ease you into it, but you know what?
Let's ease into it.
Yeah. So apparently it's like, you know, 2020 is just getting worse and worse. I saw this comic book this comic strip that kind of made me laugh and cry at the same time. You know how you have these people that come over to your house and the party's over and they're just staying there and you cannot clean up or go to bed until they fucking leave. You know those people? So the comic was, this guy was like, oh man, we should really start thinking about packing it up, because looks at his watch, it's 9 o'clock and all. And then there's like this is fat 2020 with this oblivious stupid look on his face. And eventually he's just like, you know what, I need you to just get the fuck out of my house. And then 2020 chooses not to leave. I am super afraid that we will get to the end of this year and just realize that no, years are just things on a calendar, and the shitty things that happen can easily just step
that's
on
the thing.
People talk
about 2020 being a shitty year, and I'm just like, you guys realize it's not the year that does it. It's just shitty things are happening. Like they are calendar agnostic. They don't care. It just happens.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, I'll wake up January 1st, 2021. It's like, everything's fine for real.
That's not
like that therapist that you've seen, like COVID is just going to look at us watching. You know what? Our time is up. So, before we went on to that, Jammer, you were going to start talking to us about some news that just continues to drive home the point that we're making about how awful 2020 is.
Yeah, so I was, and I'll talk about this later. I was watching Mulan. I got an early screener for Mulan, and my friend texted me and was like, holy shit, as I was watching it. He's like, Chadwick Boseman died. And I was like, what? Like, in my mind, I was thinking, was it COVID? And then in my other mind was thinking, did he get shot at a protest? And then I was thinking, was it some freaking weather thing? And that's just goes to show how shitty this year has been, because literally it could be one of several things. But it turned out to be an independently horrific thing, and that he has just been keeping secrets from the world. He, apparently, ever since around 2016, he's been battling colon cancer, and kept a secret from everyone. As far as we can tell, Marvel Studios didn't know. No one really knew outside of his inner circle. And he actually thought, as of about a week before he died, that he would probably be able to get over it, beat the cancer, bulk up for Black Panther 2, and continue on with that role. But sadly, that didn't happen. And then last week, he passed away at, I believe it was age of 43. Sorry, off the top of my head, I don't remember. I think it was 43 was how old
he was. Right. That's right, 43.
It just hit us like a fucking dump truck, because that is just unexpected on many levels. A, fucking, not only is he a, you know, seemed like a relatively, you know, healthy and fit person, but, you know, and you don't expect to hear those types of things about relatively fit young people. And then all of a sudden, it also just because he's fucking Black Panther, like he's T'Challa, you know, he is sort of Marvel Studios' next big character that they're probably going to capitalize for the next decade. And he raised the bar for so many people. He helped elevate people of color to mainstream status in the superhero world. And it has never been done on that level before. And to the minds of many, he is the fucking king, and he'll always be. And it's just really tragic. You know, it's a Heath Ledger situation, as people had said, where it's a really young talent and he's just been taken away from us unexpectedly and far too soon. So Brandon, how did this news hit you? What were you doing, and how does he feel right now now that a week has passed?
As with most things that happen in the United States, I was asleep, given the time difference. So I woke up to a friend sending me a message. And the first thing I saw was her message, and it was like, don't wake up. You're going to wake up to some bad news. And you know, you never know what someone else's scale is, or like what their metric is. And I was like, ah, I can't be that bad. And then I saw, I opened up Twitter, and of course, Twitter just like blasting it. And it just sucked. And for all of the reasons that you said, just a rising star in the industry who had already kind of made his mark and worked with some huge names like Harrison Ford and Robert Downey Jr. and all those folks, and made some really great movies that I really like outside of Marvel. So Marshall is one that as a lawyer really speaks to me, where he's portraying Thurgood Marshall and taking this case and doing this thing. And there was a thing that he even did in that movie that I always wanted to do as an attorney. So it was very cool to see him do that. And so it impacted me in that way. And it's just sad and it's frustrating. And I've had people in my family die of cancer and just have their own bodies kind of turn on them and betray them. And it's hard to watch, and it's frustrating to see. And there was a lot of speculation, I think, in April when he posted a picture and he was thinning out. And I thought that it was for a role. I did not suspect that it was anything like what it was. And the last thing that I'll say is, I think one of the reasons that it impacts me so much is, the older that I get, the more I find that I have to separate myself from the art, from the artist. And there are a lot of people in the industry that, you know, as time goes on, something happens and you're just like, I don't know that I can, how I feel about that person as a person. And time and time again, yeah, something like that. And time and time again, he showed himself to be just an upstanding and outstanding human being, just in terms of accepting this role. And what you said, like the idea of, you know, he's always going to be our king. That's how people felt. And you would see people just react. I think it was Jimmy Fallon. It was either Jimmy Kimmel or Fallon, where they did this thing and fans got to meet him. Yeah, it was one of the Jimmys. Mm-hmm. And they just were so excited and just so overflowing with joy, talking about, you know, what he'd done. And that was before he walked out. You know, these people were speaking from the heart and talking about what that role was and what it did. And then he comes out and they get to meet him, and they, like, their faces light up and all of that other stuff. And then there was another video that came out, and this is the last thing I'll say. That was him with the cast of Black Panther talking about someone who was terminal with cancer and talking about the struggle that they were going through. And to know that no one knew the struggle that he was going through at the time that he's talking about this story of this kid. I can't remember if it was one or two kids.
I think it was one. I think I know what you're talking about. One. I think it was one.
Okay. And they wanted to see this movie before it even came out. They had these feelings about this movie, and they just the kid did not get to see the movie. And you think about all of the struggles that you've had in your life, and people who have been there for you through all the crap that you go through, and the things that suck, or the bad day that you've had, or whatever illness that you've had. And you know, you generally want as many people as possible to help and support you. And it was just, he seemed to keep it very tight and very small. And I think that that's impressive and amazing. And again, just to think about what he was going through so privately while also taking on that role, it's just amazing. So
yeah. Nick?
Yeah, it was posted on our Slack. And my first response to these is always like, you sure? And I got on Twitter and stuff and saw it. And I couldn't believe it. It's one of those things where I just had to call my dad immediately after, since I live alone. It was like, ugh, I can't, like, ugh. It was just, you know, because it's shocking, obviously, at that age. And in reality, like, no, everyone feels like they know this celebrity, but they've never met him, but they've seen interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, a lot of people die from cancer all the time and don't get that coverage. But because you feel like you know him a little bit, and you even though you've seen his stuff, I find it absolutely amazing that he had stage 3 and then stage 4 colon cancer while shooting these movies and while trying to stay in shape. And it just, it speaks to his, you know, just his commitment and his wanting to deliver. Not, I mean, for the fans in general, but, you know, I definitely think of all the little kids that were able to look up to Black Panther because they hadn't seen a superhero that looked like them before. And, you know, it's like Halloween. Now I can be Black Panther. I don't have to be, you know, Captain. Like, I have someone who looks like me that I can look up to. And yeah. I think that's what makes it even more devastating than if we lost, like, say, one of the other Avengers, you know, or different actors. That
right.
he meant so much to a lot of people in a way a lot of actors couldn't. And if I hadn't mentioned it yet, I definitely cried. So, yeah, it was.
I think what makes this, this makes me hate about one thing in retrospect. I read the part of the script for Avengers Endgame. And actually, it wasn't me. It was, I think it was the Facebook page screen something. It's had to do with screenwriting. And what they do is they have the screenplay scrolling alongside the actual scene. So you can compare the difference between how it was written and then how it ended up being shot. And one big difference in Endgame was on that moment where Cap hears Falcon go on your left. And in the script, he walks out, and not Black Panther, but in the movie, Black Panther is the one that walks out and has that sort of that moment between him and Captain America. And makes me happy that we got that sort of big iconic moment with T'Challa, with Chadwick Boseman, before he passed away. Because that's going to be sort of one of the last moments. Like, yeah, he's in the route in the movie, like sort of the big moment. I'm happy we got that moment with him. Not that I don't love Falcon, but, you know, it's just one of those things in retrospect.
Yeah. I agree.
But yeah, it's sad. Real sad. I have to say, I got nothing else. It's just very sad.
Okay.
Should we transition to other news, or do you want to segue out of that and then hop back in? I don't know if you want to do lighter things before we get into news, but what do you think?
Yeah. It's hard to transition from that to, like, let's talk about the new Bond trailer. So
yeah,
but unfortunately, given what we do, that is what we have to do. So, you know, to him and his family, and you know, everyone that had like all the fans around the world, it's just a terrible loss. So, unfortunately, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you guys have to say about Chadwick Boseman passing? What did he mean to you? Let us know in the comments or message, you know, all of us on Twitter at @LRM_exclusive. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And let's transition to a distinctly happier story for the time being. And that is No Time to Die got a trailer today.
The past isn't dead. James, fate draws us back together. Now your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Seffin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, it'll be the death of you.
You can imagine why I've come back to play.
Today, Thursday. So yes, yesterday when you're listening to this. And so it's the final James Bond movie with Daniel Craig. And it shows him reuniting with Ana de Armas from Knives Out, as well as Lea Seydoux, who was in the previous film, Spectre. And obviously Rami Malek is playing the villain. And yeah, it shows all sorts of fun action happening in this movie. And I've mentioned this last time. I think we talked about James Bond trailers when the first one came out. And to me, I am not a huge action spy movie trailer person. They usually don't. And James Bond, I feel like, is especially guilty of just not being that much fun to watch, because it's just action scenes. You get some ominous stuff, you get some maybe basic stuff with the villain, and then just boom, action scene of Bond jumping off a bridge, or, you know, him slamming into walls or whatever. And yeah, it's cool, but like it doesn't stir anything inside of my chest at all. But I feel like this one kind of did for me. And it wasn't necessarily that I think the trailer did anything that much different. But there are two things that I think really I took away from this trailer. One, I feel like this is the most human James Bond has been, because there are a lot of moments where he just seems like a normal dude. Like when this grenade drops next to him, he's shocked and like looking at it. I'm like, come on, you're James Bond. You know what a grenade is. Run. And then there was another moment when there was a line he gave, like, there's nothing, there may be nothing left to save. And he sounded like,
if we don't do this,
he sounded like he was sad about that fact. And I'm like, James Bond, you're not supposed to have emotions. What's wrong with you? So it was cool. Like, I actually liked the fact that he was more human. There is definitely sort of an uptick in sort of the kick-ass female quota in this movie. And I think it's a great thing. You have Ana de Armas playing this character who looks like she could be sort of a femme fatale, or maybe not, maybe just an ally. It's hard to tell. And Lea Seydoux is back. I'm not really sure what her role is going to be. If she's going to be action oriented at all, but she might be. And then you have, I don't know the name of the new woman who's the new 007 agent, but she's here as well, kicking all sorts of ass.
Lashana Lynch.
Lashana Lynch.
Captain Marvel, right?
Lashana Lynch.
Yeah. Oh, right. So yeah, it's just, they all are really cool and they're all doing their own thing. And that leads me into the next one and question for you guys. And I guess this is a segue question for you. Will this be the first James Bond movie where he only has sex with one female character?
Because the first where he only has sex with one.
Because I say this because there is a sex scene here that is teased. I think that's Lea Seydoux's character, and I think they're I don't know if they're married, but they're definitely in a relationship. And if she's around, if she doesn't die in the first half of the movie, then you know that's it, right? That's the one. Is that weird to anyone else?
Well, let's start with Nick.
It's a weird question.
It is a weird question because it's a weird question because I was thinking because he's always dicking around in these movies, like no matter the situation, and it's always kind of weird. But now he's like in like a monogamous relationship. I'm curious if they're gonna play that angle at all. I don't think it's a weird situation. We're talking about James Bond here. It's not a weird question. I think it's a very normal question.
Okay, I feel like the way you worded the question initially doesn't work because there are plenty of movies where I only have sex with one woman. It's okay. Just the point is it is like a fling.
Yeah.
So, but the way you word it later makes more sense. Where, yeah, because they were in some kind of relationship in the last, like they walked off together in the last movie. Obviously, they weren't married.
They're married in this movie, or at least they're together in this movie for sure.
Yeah. And the first trailer or the last trailer is more weird where like, like the dialogue pointed at her, like she left him or there was something that happened.
She wrote a note that said, forgive me.
Oh, I forgot about that. See, now you're making me sad.
But, that would be really interesting if that's the case. I definitely think they're trying to go that direction because
I know that Daniel Craig is super feminist and stuff. So I could see him personally pushing. He's like, no, let's get these girls doing some cool stuff. And hell, let's end with James Bond in a monogamous relationship that actually lasts.
Yeah, but I mean, even more than, I don't think it's just Daniel Craig. I think it's pressure in general where it's like he's such an outdated character thing. Like where like, it's
archetype. It's not,
yeah, exactly. We're like, I mean, that's how you start in the 60s and stuff. And there really wasn't a big outcry to change it in the 90s or the early 2000s. But now these days it seems, I don't know, it lessens the character in a way. It's like, oh yeah, he'll just fuck anything. He doesn't give a shit. He's getting information. He just wants to get laid between fight scenes.
Yeah.
And so it would be a nice change if they did what you said. I especially don't want to have him get laid by the girl from Knives Out because of such different ages in that movie and in general, which is actually why I respected Casino Royale. I think it is. There's a sex scene or maybe Spectre with a woman who's actually his age.
I mean, that's actually what he said. So who was it? Who was the woman who it was? I forgot who it was.
I can't remember the actress's name.
But someone was just like, oh, you know, they were interviewing Daniel Craig. They're like, is he going to be, he's going to succumb to the feminine wiles of an older woman. He's like, I think he'd be in the feminine wiles of someone his own age because, you know, it's like, he's not exactly super young. He's no spring chicken himself. So like, that's not abnormal. But yeah, I forget which, I knew it was definitely Spectre, but I forget who it was.
Yeah. And I even thought,
I tried to forget that movie.
I thought that was a step in the right direction of he's not being laid by some 20-year-old or something. He's or even 30-year-old, mm-hmm. But that's the direction you hope they go. I mean, but then again, it's such a part of the franchise where it's like, how long is this gonna last? Is the next James Bond just gonna go back to like fucking anything that moves?
It has to regress because so one, you said archetype jammer. I mean, like he literally is the cliche, right? Yeah. That's where all of that comes from. Every time, like you remember, I don't know if you guys remember this movie, but the first XXX with Vin Diesel.
Oh God, like, yeah. They killed off the reason, James Bond stand-in
they
character.
Killed off the James Bond. Right. And so, like, that's kind of where that goes. And you look at Mission Impossible, and that's not necessarily his thing, right? He's, I don't want to say monogamous, but he does not seem to sleep around like
Definitely not.
So I don't know that I think that this is, I agree with Nick. I don't know that I think it's necessarily it's a necessary changing with the times. So the character is being updated, and I think it fits. So
that was a really good point about Mission Impossible. Cause I think the only movie, I've been rewatching him. The first one, I don't think he actually has sex with John Voight's wife.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Does he once? And he's pretty aggressive, yes, actually.
And I think you know that it happened later because John Voight said, where's the effect of, like, I knew that it would work having tasted the goods myself.
Yeah. And now thou shalt not covet.
Yeah.
Friends. Yep. And then the only other one I can think of is Thandie Newman in 2. But even there, he seemed to have more of a connection to her later in the movie than Bond ever does with anyone he lays.
Yeah, they seem like genuine relationships as opposed to, like...
I guess this James Bond has had more. He's had Lea Seydoux and he's had Eva Green, but she was definitely a femme fatale character that obviously didn't pan out for him.
Yeah, and he thought he was in love in that one. But even before that, the beginning of Casino Royale, he just has sex with a random person for information.
Yeah, on the beach.
Yeah, because when they find her body, it's kind of gross.
It's definitely gross.
Sand and stuff.
And not only was it gross, he didn't care.
No, yeah. He didn't give a fuck. Yeah, he was pretty heartless in that movie. He kind of like tossed her around, had his way with her, and then kind of moved on. And it was just like, all right, well, she's dead now.
Even like in classic Bond movies, like at the end of the movie, they're together. The most recent person he has sex with, whether it's like GoldenEye or like Pussy Galore back in Goldfinger or something. Like they always end the movie together. And the next movie, it's like,
what happened to that person?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. James Bond is back.
Pretty much. So what'd you guys think of the trailer? Brandon?
I liked it a lot. I liked the first one. And I like this one. I don't think it added too much, and I don't think it revealed too much. All of the story beats that you got in the first one, you kind of get in this one. I don't remember seeing Ana de Armas in the first one.
I don't either.
To the point, okay. Yeah, to the point where I was like, oh, she's in this movie, because I had not looked at the cast list. The only people that I knew were in it were Lea Seydoux and Lynch. So it was a fun trailer. It seems to have the right level of gravitas. It seems to have the right level of emotional connection, more so than, like, for whatever reason, Spectre didn't do it for me on an emotional level, even seeing the trailers. But even leading up to it, it didn't do anything. Like, as soon as I saw, I'm pretty sure one of the trailers had the plane going down the mountain and clipping the trees. Like, I saw that in the trailer and I went, I don't know if I'm going to like that. But it's weird because that is typical Bond. But there's something, I think that they've done a good job of giving Daniel Craig spectacle, but at the same time, keeping it grounded enough where it's still fun and interesting. It's like Casino Royale was like that. And one of the things they talked about with that one was like the number of times that the car flipped. Like, that was the big deal for that movie.
Oh, the Aston Martin at the end or towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, like the action was more practical. And so once you get back to Spectre, you're like, oh, you're just going back to what it was before. So this feels like a course correction.
Yeah, like I'm feeling pretty impacty whenever he jumped off the bridge and slammed into the wall and did a bunch of things. I got some Tom Cruise vibes.
Yeah.
Not that he did it, but just the fact that it was actually happening and you could feel the
the
slamming.
I definitely got that too for that scene or that shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it looks good. Like, I think this emotionally is getting me more than the last one. You know, the other one I thought was good for the action stuff, but this one somehow, I don't know how, I'm not convinced that it actually had more emotion to it, but I felt like there was more character built into this trailer. You got to see maybe a little bit more personality from him or a better idea how the characters fit into the whole puzzle. And it just made me more interested in seeing the movie.
It's interesting though, that just like Wonder Woman, we would never have this trailer if it came out in time. Because like we had the final trailer because the movie was like weeks away before they moved it. It was like one of the I think it was the closest release that got pushed besides like littler stuff. So
I guess that's the next big question. Do you guys still think it's going to come out in November? So Tenet has come out and given everyone quote unquote safe harbor to release COVID? Movies.
Tenet comes out.
They've given everyone COVID. Tenet.
Well,
I mean, they've certainly given everyone permission, and you see that Tenet made a ton of movie money at the box office. I think it made like $53 million in the international box office.
This is going to be a great weekend to watch because not only is Tenet coming out in the US, but you have Mulan that's going to hit VOD. Which platform or audience is going to take to? I think people are going to be looking to this weekend to see what exactly is going to do well, what approach they should take. And we actually have a report that Shockey is writing up. Hopefully it'll be out today or yesterday, actually, by the point this comes out. It has to do with sort of the marketing stuff behind the scenes of, you know, Disney. Nothing super huge, but just this idea that, you know, they're figuring stuff out and everything has changed, you know, between the rise of the streaming services, between COVID. Everyone's just trying to figure it out. And there's never really been a good reason for them to reshift the way they do marketing. Or at least there has been a good reason. But like, I feel like over time, it's basically just become this mammoth, archaic structure that they don't really take away from because they're scared of what it'll do to their bottom line. But they just keep adding things to it. So it just keeps inflating. And this has sort of given them a reason to figure out ways to just refigure out how they distribute, how they market things, and what the payoffs will ultimately be. So this is going to be a huge weekend to watch. And I think it will dictate mm-hmm. whether or not this movie actually comes out in November, or if they decide to just let it go to streaming. I guess Sony would be the one behind it. So
I think, I agree that Tenet's performance and where we're at COVID-wise in the
fall/winter
mm-hmm. will determine if they push it again. I don't think they'll release it straight to VOD. Sony doesn't really have, I don't know, maybe they will, but.
One of the things I'm kind of curious about, not to stray too much from the entertainment part of it, but one of the things we do here in Germany is when you go eat somewhere, you leave a card with all your contact information on it and the contact information of the party that you were with. So contact tracing.
Trace it.
I'm curious, do they do that for movies? Wait, overseas? So
can you explain that again? I don't understand. Sure.
So I go to a restaurant and the two of you come with me. There's one card for the table. I am the main person. So I write down my name and phone number. And then you guys do the same thing. You write down your name and phone number. And so when we leave, if there is a positive case that occurs at the restaurant, I don't know within what time period, then they will notify those people like, hey, you might want to go get tested. You might have to do X, Y, Z, and blah, blah, blah. So for those theaters that are open overseas, I'm curious, have they implemented the same kind of contact tracing? And I think that if they have, that would be another thing to watch. Even if they haven't, right? I think you'd be able to, you might be able to say like, hey, 2 weeks ago, we didn't have X number of cases in London. Since this movie opened in these areas around these movie theaters, we have seen a spike in cases.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be another metric to watch as to which medium will win out for at least a few more months.
Totes.
Yeah. Well, I want to transition this to a story that's not on the list because it just broke earlier, but then a new piece of it just broke right now as we're recording. There was a report that the production of Batman has been halted because a member of production got COVID. And a new report just followed up that said Robert Pattinson has tested positive for COVID. So he was the one who did it.
Batman.
The statement says a member of Batman production was tested positive for COVID-19 and is isolating in accordance with established protocols. Filming is temporarily paused. The information about Robert Pattinson comes from Vanity Fair, who confirmed through other highly placed sources that Pattinson was the individual who became sick. We'll see how long that takes for him to get better and for him to get through it. That's really unfortunate. But it just kind of shows just how prevalent this is. You know, we want to keep going, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't care how badly we want to see movies. It seems to be very patient. It doesn't care like how bad we want to go to pubs or movies. It's just like, I'm still here.
How inconsiderate.
Yeah. So the thing that'll be interesting is, so I'm curious what protocols they've instituted. So he gets sick. So now does everyone that is part of the production that had close contact, like his hair and makeup people, are they going to get tested?
I'm sure
well?
They're like, quarantining and constant testing over the course of the next week.
Or even so. Other like actors, like did he just have a kiss scene with Catwoman or something like while he was
hopefully
exposed
not.
To COVID?
Yeah. I mean, you saw, I don't know if
like,
you guys
how
saw
this, happen?
But the...
I was thinking like, how does this happen? Because they, didn't they like quarantine beforehand? Like, how did that happen? Did he go out and like go have a drink at a bar without people noting and then came back?
Yeah. I mean, so I don't know if you guys saw this, like the Rock and basically his whole family also have it. And it's just,
that
it seems like he's...
Because he's a busy motherfucker. He's going all over the place. It's like, he's doing whatever. He's all over.
Yeah, I don't disagree. He's in a lot of places. And it just goes to show kind of the insidious nature of this virus. Like, even if you allegedly quarantine before you started work on the Batman, or if you're out there hanging out with everybody, like it'll just wait. So yeah, just be safe, do the right thing.
Anyway, any last thoughts about that or James Bond or any of the other tangents we went on?
Did they talk about whether or not it would delay production at all?
It did not. I mean, yeah, they're gonna halt production for now for an undecided amount of time, but we don't know if it's gonna delay the release as of right now. Still October 2021.
And I think you're going to see this a lot more on other sets, too.
What's that?
Like, you're going to see this a lot more on other sets, too, where, like, they've started back up, and they're like, oh, no, we need to shut down for a while because a bunch of our crew got COVID or whatever.
You guys know the Twitter account Atlanta Filming?
No. Yes. That's like list things because everything's filming in Atlanta right now.
No, but Atlanta Marvel Filming. Project. No, they are a pretty reliable source when it comes to stuff that's being shot in Atlanta. And, you know, they've sent like a lot of set photos and shit and like a lot of other things and details. They actually haven't heard from them recently, to be perfectly honest. I think they kind of went under the radar for a while or went receded. But one of the guy who runs the account, they said that Atlanta is like bringing a bunch of the lower, quote unquote, the lower productions now, and they are not being careful. Let me actually find it before I just quote it, because I feel like it's important to at least be somewhat right. So Atlanta Filming, he said in a tweet, where the fuck is this? What is happening now is because of all the delay in studio productions, all of those CD low-life type productions are starting up, hoping to make content to fill the gap. Are they being safe? Nope. Then he goes on, this is unrelated. No, but that's it. That's the tweet. Obviously, we don't know where he's being placed or where he is, but it sounds like he's a bit, I don't know, skeptical that studios are being as careful as they're trying to be, which sucks.
Yeah, what do you say, CD productions?
Yeah,
CD low life, isn't that what you
low
said?
Life CD, it's pretty harsh language.
I almost made me think there'd be smaller movies or even like that's how you describe porn shoots in.
Yeah, he said all of those CD low life type productions are starting up, hoping to make content to fill the gap. Are they being safe? Nope.
Like Transmorphers.
Yeah, it makes it sound like it isn't the big studio movies, it's other people stepping in.
Maybe.
Like, hey, we can release our stupid independent movie.
Maybe.
There's nothing else out and people will watch it.
Yeah. But clearly the Batman, unfortunately, what they are doing isn't enough. So hopefully everyone is safe. Hopefully Pattinson is safe and everyone in that crew is staying healthy. Maybe it was an isolated incident. And hopefully other studios will take a look at that and realize, holy shit, we actually need to be careful because it could actually hit our production and affect it. Blah, 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 blah. Anything else? What were we talking about right before that? Was that the new trailer tangent?
Sort of.
You just said that was breaking news.
Okay.
Then we have other news you wanted to talk about. But yeah, that's the only reason you brought it up. It's because it just
broke. Yeah. So let me go ahead. We should actually get going.
We were talking about COVID trends. Yeah.
Okay. So moving on to the next news. This is interesting. John Boyega recently spoke out when talking with GQ, and he discussed how differently he is being he was treated. He and other people of color were treated. In regards to this, so I guess their characters and how important they were to the overall series and how people perceived him from the audience perspective, I'm assuming. He says, I'm the only cast member who had their own unique experience of that franchise based on their race. Let's leave it like that. It makes you angry with a process like that. It makes you much more militant. It changes you because you realize I got given this opportunity, but I'm in the industry that wasn't even ready for me. Nobody else in the cast had people saying they were going to boycott the movie because they were in it. Nobody else had the uproar and the death threats sent to their Instagram DMs and social media saying black this and black that, and you shouldn't be a stormtrooper, because nobody else had that experience. But yet people are surprised that I'm this way. That's my frustration.
They're surprised that he's angry about it.
Sounds like it. Yeah. Sounds like people are like, oh, jump. Like, I mean, a lot of people are, no, a lot of people are saying like, he should stop biting the hand that feeds him. He should just shut up and act. There's lots of people saying that.
Yeah. It's basically the Laura Ingraham argument, which is shut up and dribble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and
he's always been like, do you have more to the story before I jump in?
I do, but continue. Okay. I'm talking about his anger. This is about his anger. So you can actually just jump off of that, but there's more overall.
I mean, it's warranted. Just speak out, man. Do it. Like, this is great. Like, you know, I think everything you said, the other people who are attacking him or like dismissing this, is fucking stupid. Like, of course you have the right to be like, yeah, I've been unfairly attacked. My character was unfairly treated. I mean, he's just like a cool guy outside of that. You see him at like Black Lives Matter protests, like leading them in London and stuff. And like, I mean, I guess like Chadwick Boseman, he's someone to like look up to, like in that area.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, yeah, you don't treat him like this. He's a fantastic actor. Maybe he wasn't written as well as he should be, but that's basically, as someone said online, that's the case. If people don't like it, that's the case for all the Star Wars characters.
But we'll get to that part of it in a bit. But Brandon, what do you have to say about that comment, the first comment from Boyega?
About his anger?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is going to sound like it diminishes his comment, but it's not meant to. I feel like generally this cast has had this pushed on him. So Daisy Ridley experienced the same thing because of her gender.
Kelly Marie Tran
experienced the same thing because of her race and her gender.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems like in this new era, it's unfortunate that they came out when they did, because it seems like where we are in America and in the world to some extent, but mostly in America, where we're so divided on some of this stuff that it's a very easy target. And so his race becomes a very easy target. And I remember having conversations with people about that. And one of the conversations was, this guy was telling me that he felt like they just chose this cast for the purpose of, I can't think of how he phrased it, but it was essentially to market to basically like social justice warrior marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have like this rainbow coalition of these characters, and like he just felt like it wasn't his Star Wars based on that, and it was trying to send a message. And
I'm rolling my eyes so hard at that comment. I fucking hate that shit. It's not my Star Wars,
right? But that was his feeling about it. And you see kind of what Boyega is talking about. So like, this guy isn't, at least to the best of my knowledge, one of the people attacking him online. But imagine that. Like, this guy is more, he is less volatile than some of the people that we know are on 4chan or Reddit or on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so just imagine like this guy who's using like normal speak to talk about this. And then there's that element that, you know, is more unhinged. So yeah, I totally understand what Boyega is talking about, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, and it's so funny to me how people are like surprised, like, oh my God, he's angry at the fact that people are sending him death threats, even though he gets money and gets to be on TV. Well,
that's the thing that sucks about being a person of color in any system, right? Because the thing that you have to contend with is constant microaggressions. And it happens again and again and again, and it's big and it's small, and it's big and it's small. And when you react to it, now you're the angry black man. Yeah. And so you have to figure out, at what point am I going to say something about this? Is it worse? Like, you have to constantly think about how you're going to be perceived based on how you react to something that's very justified for you to be reacting to. But you're concerned about, like he said, future employment, right? He brought that up, because when you say that, when you become that person, when people can peg you as the angry black man, now you're unemployable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what he said during the Black Lives Matter protests, right? Mm-hmm. And in regards to what Nick was talking about, the whole like, well, that's the way the character was written thing. He said here, you get yourself involved in projects and you're not necessarily going to like everything. But what I would say to Disney is do not bring out a black character, market them to be much more important in the franchise than they are, and then have them pushed to the side. It's not good. I'll say it straight up. Then he says, like, you guys knew what to do with Daisy Ridley. You knew what to do with Adam Driver. You knew what to do with these other people. But when it came to Kelly Marie Tran, when it came to John Boyega, you know, fuck all. So what do you want me to say? What do they want you to say is, or what they want you to say is, I enjoyed being a part of it. It was great experience. Nah, nah, nah. I'll take the deal when it is great experience. They gave all the nuance to Adam Driver, all the nuance to Daisy Ridley. Let's be honest. Daisy knows this. Adam knows this. Everybody knows this. I'm not exposing everybody or anything. Brandon, first thoughts.
Yeah, just, you should just be happy to be here is basically what he's expressing. And I don't think that he's wrong. So you and I, Jammer, had a conversation about this on Twitter. I think that you're right in that he had a lot of stuff happening in The Last Jedi, but at the same time, some of that growth came in one of the most derided sections of that movie.
Yeah.
And if you back up to The Force Awakens, they made it seem like he was going to be more than what he was. Mm-hmm. And so, not to rehash the conversation about plan versus no plan, there are little things that you can pick out throughout, certainly the course of that first movie, that just went nowhere. Where, like, what is their relationship, right? So it seemed like there was something and then it went away. It seemed like there was something between Adam Driver and him where he very clearly knew, like, this is the stormtrooper that went rogue, right? So before Phasma could say who it was, he was like, it was this one. And she's like, yeah. And so there is something to that. And eventually it gets revealed, not even revealed in the movie. So in the Rise of Skywalker, you get to that. And apparently part of that is because he's force sensitive, which also explains why he didn't get chopped to bits facing Kylo Ren in the first movie. It's like, okay, why is that shit being explained outside of the movie? And it's the frustration that, so you see characters talk about, okay, if someone is gay in the movie or in the book, why are we having this conversation now explaining that? If it is important to the character, why are you just dropping it? It might as well have not even happened. And so that's kind of the same thing where you're talking about, well, this character is force sensitive and that explains all this other stuff. So if it was such an important character trait, like, why wasn't that part of the movie? And you get that. And the last thing I'll say is the other part of that is I remember him talking about the trailer to The Force Awakens when J.J. Abrams said to him, hey, come look at this. And he showed him the opening shot, and the opening shot was him as a stormtrooper, which at that point raised so many questions and all sorts of stuff. And he thought J.J. Abrams thought it was a really cool thing for him. And at the time, he thought it was a really cool thing for him. And it did spark exactly what he's talking about. Like, what do you mean black stormtrooper and all this other stuff? So, yeah, it's a frustrating situation.
Nick?
I don't have much more to add more than I was saying earlier about the fans being like, just shut up and be thankful. I mean, it's just a shame. It's going to continue. I hear all the time people where they're like, oh, we're trying to diversify a movie. You know, maybe not the white guy in the comic isn't going to be a white guy in the movie, or even just like the character can be written for anyone. And we're going to try to lean towards diversity because we're trying to get better because Hollywood, we're horrible at this. And I know people who are like, well, shouldn't you just cast the best actor? And it's like, well, why can't the best actor they find be someone of color or LGBT or a woman or something?
Like, yeah, people who say that have no idea.
Yeah, people who say that
worse. They have no idea how much
that
it has to do
the
with
white actors. Yeah, that we can only find much, great, like, white actors. So
it's like how much they never know. They don't realize that, oh, people who are like a white director is just more likely to by default cast a white actor. And that's just how it works. And the people you hang out with, they're more likely to hang out with people of the same race. So the people making connections are generally not, you know, people of color. And it's just, that's how it works. People are like, oh, well, they need to, you know, rise above that. Da, 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 da. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. You know what you're talking about. Well, like, it's not just about, you know, rising above it. It's not as easy of just sort of pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps. Like, the whole system needs to be rethought and changed in a way. So they need to make people up top need to make the extra effort. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. At least not anytime
soon. Well, even beyond that, one of the things that gets frustrating is when you do see what Nick is talking about, when they do discuss either changing race or changing the gender of characters, there's always that person or several people who are like, okay, well, as long as somebody gets to be white when they play back Planet Theory. There's always somebody who wants to get in on that karma and for those lulls to be able to say, well, it's not fair, right?
Yeah.
So they just love to jump on that.
I hate that. I hate that so much. It's just so much ignorance. So much ignorance of how humankind works, how the industry works. It's just the industry is risk averse and the industry is comfortable. And people like to just they by default do things. They don't even think about it. There was actually I literally just watched an interview with Robert Rodriguez and he was reflecting, this is a while ago. He was reflecting back on when they did From Dusk Till Dawn. And if you guys remember, there's a scene where they get to the Titty Twister, the name of the bar in Mexico, and Salma Hayek comes out with a snake and is dancing. And in the script, Quentin Tarantino wrote her as like this blonde woman. And then Robert Rodriguez was like, hey, you know, so they're in Mexico. It should probably be like a Mexican woman. And he's just like, oh, I never thought of that. That's it. That's all it is. It's like, I didn't think about that because by default, white guy or white woman. That's just something they think. And he even talked about how when he was making Spy Kids, the studio was like, well, why are they Latin? And then he was like, oh, that's just because I based it on my family. So I figured they'd be Latin. And they're like, do they have to be Latin or whatever? And he's like, yeah, because it's based on my family and stuff. And he's like, okay. Like they let it go. But it was just one of those things where if he had been a white director, they probably would have been like, oh yeah, they could be white. Like they just wouldn't have thought of it.
I saw, I think a producer or an executive said something like this. And I completely agree. It was like, unless it's important to the story that their race is a certain way, I hate it when someone actually describes the character's ethnicity or hair color or something, you know, like in the screenplay where you're like, Jack, like white, blue-eyed, blonde hair, and it doesn't matter towards the plot.
Mm-hmm.
You just be like, Jack, like,
I mean, I don't mind
39 somethings, buff
I don't,
dude.
I don't necessarily agree with that because I think
the default is white.
The default is white.
That's what I'm saying. So like, if it could be, if you don't care the ethnicity, like, if you're like, oh, this,
but I'm saying, I'm picturing
him as a white,
but
just don't say it.
No, I know.
But the thing is, even when Tarantino's script, even if he hadn't written blonde in his head, it was a blonde woman. So, I think it is important.
It's important to like, if it's a brown character in your head, you should write
character. Yeah, but like, I don't see why you need to label a character as white unless like they're playing some racist person. Or something.
The average screenplay
player is gonna be like, or I write a screenplay or something, it's gonna be like, oh, Nick, why? Like, or not white.
I see,
like,
I see your
brown
point.
Hair and like brown eyes.
I see your point, so you're trying to, I don't agree.
Yeah, you're trying to describe something that's a race neutral thing, but the problem is the default, the bombardment that you get is white. So it doesn't matter if you remove what's written in that script, everyone will assume that it's something else. So like those executives on Spy Kids, they will assume that that is a white family. And they didn't, they up until the point where casting occurred, they would have assumed that it was a white family. And when Robert Rodriguez was like, hey, these are going to be Latin kids. And they were like, why? The same thing would have occurred because in their minds, they would have been a white family.
Well, that's why like in a case like that, where you know you want to have it like, because like, it's based on my family. So I'm going to say, you know, Spy Kid, Latina, you know, like, I don't know. I guess we disagree, but I just think if you're writing a generic character and you don't care because you're a white writer, you shouldn't describe them as in your script. As like,
so
a Tarantino shouldn't write a character and be like blonde hair, blue eyes.
When I write stories, I almost always describe their skin color because I know people are going to imagine them white by default unless I say otherwise.
Well, I think a book is different than a screenplay, I think. But I get what you're saying there. Yeah.
Yeah. I just feel like the need to, I don't know, to make sure people know that I'm imagining this character as not white. I don't know why. Actually, I do know why.
Well, I think so, you should in that case. I just don't think you ever need to describe someone as the opposite. Like, if you want a character to be a certain,
if I want them to be white,
look or ethnicity, you should say that. But I don't know.
Blonde hair or light skin or something. I'll probably just throw that in there. But like, there, I threw you guys a bone. You happy? That's what I'll be like. Got your white person. Take it. But yeah, I see your point. I just think that I see it, Like they should be, it should be neutral in scripts, but because by default, so many things go to white, they're going to cast white actors unless the person who wrote that has a say in everything. So I think it's important to specify race, or at least it can be important. I guess it doesn't have to be important, but I think it should, even if it's like white, dark skin or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. We can go back and forth. It's like, it's not a black and white rule. No, yeah. Like it just, it depends.
Stepped right into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Shades of gray and all that.
50.
Yeah, how many?
Let's say 50. 50 of them, just off the top of my head, for no reason.
100. Anyway.
Right. That's a sequel.
I know.
Anyways, anything else that I was going to say here? I think that's it. I think it's race is an unfortunate thing. People like to pretend they're colorblind. That's just not, that doesn't work. Sorry.
Well, that's colorblind. Not really.
What are you talking about? I don't see color, Jammer.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not, it's interesting. That goes back to an Andy Richter episode way back when I was a kid and didn't think about it, where he's dating a black woman and he's like, oh, don't worry. Like, I don't see, and it turns out her main thing that she relates to is being Irish.
The hell? I don't know.
Like, you know, she can be black, but she's like, oh, and I also have Irish ancestry. So she relates more to like her Irish culture. But the whole point of what Andy Richter learns is that he's like, well, I'm colorblind. She's like, no, you should recognize being colorblind is like just thinking we're all the same, whereas you should embrace each other's culture. Like, it's like, oh, I'm colorblind, I see everyone the same. It's like, no, you should embrace each other and what makes your culture special, rather than not in a tearing us apart or separating us way, but be like, oh, let's celebrate what makes all of us different as far as our, how we grew up and what we know. And yeah, Andy Richter was smart for an episode. So
people like to do the whole salad bowl or melting pot when it comes to America. Yeah. My wife prefers stew, and I agree. I think stew is good.
Potato in there and the piece.
You got your own separate culture, but at the same time, even if you have your culture, it's part of a bigger other, you know, American culture and stuff. I think that works better than
it's like a buffet.
Tapestry
that works too. Anyways, enough talk of that. I think we have more important things to talk about, like a Bill and Ted.
We
still have a movie to talk about. So let's cut it off here and transition into one Billius Tedius excellentist adventurous, except not that movie at all, because it's Face the Music. Bill and Ted Face the Music. That's the movie we're talking about today.
When your wives suggested couples therapy, do you think that this is what they had in mind?
Definitely. I mean, we're a couple of couples, right?
Bill, Ted, enough of the delusions. You didn't time travel, and you didn't go to heaven and hell. Here's a real idea for you. Be role models to your daughters. Get real jobs.
Bill, we've spent our whole life trying to unite the world. And I'm tired, dude.
Ted, we have a destiny to fulfill.
Whoa. Oh, greetings, my excellent friend. We have a problem.
We are talking about the third film in the Bill and Ted trilogy, which is weird. It's weird to say that there's a Bill and Ted trilogy.
Yeah.
Is that weird?
Yeah, it's like like the new Lord of the Rings.
Okay. I want to be the only one out there that was a strange thing. One of the first questions I want to ask you guys was, before I get into like the normal things I do, what are you all's connection to this? When did you all see the first two, if at all?
I saw the first movie probably at some point on TV in the 90s, in like the late 90s. It was probably around the time, maybe a little bit before, maybe a little after The Matrix came out. I think before The Matrix came out. And it was just a goofy movie that like my mom thought was funny and she put on. I watched it. It was cute. It was fun. I never watched Bogus Journey. I never saw the second one. I only saw Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And I actually didn't know a sequel happened until probably in college. I was like, oh, there's a sequel. I never saw it though. So my connection is only Bill and Ted, Excellent Adventure. That being said, I haven't seen it since the 90s. So it's not like I know anything about it. I don't know anything about it other than it featured a couple of, you know, rocker guys and they travel through time in a phone booth. Okay. And that's about it.
Nick Dahl, same question.
Bill and Ted's one of those movies that was the late 90s or early 2000s that when for some reason my mom has Bunko or something she's doing. So my dad, my sister and I just walked through the VHS section of older movies at Blockbuster and are like, oh, this one looks funny, because normally we focus on the comedy section. I barely remember it. I mean, I remember enough of the premise. Again, I haven't seen Bogus Journey either, but I knew enough about it to, you know, recognize death and stuff like that, which isn't a spoiler, cause it's a trailer. But so, I mean, I had a basic knowledge of it, enough to get this movie, and if the movie filled in enough that I didn't know, that I never had, I was never like, what's going on? So
okay.
Something I almost, if I wasn't unemployed, well, I bought this one on Vudu, obviously. Is it which obvious? I don't have a lot of money to do that, but if I had a little bit more money, I probably would have on Vudu. This was 25 to buy and keep, not just rent. And for 35, you get the entire trilogy.
Oh shit!
So if I was employed for $10 more, I would totally buy the first two and give them a watch. So
Okay, all right.
What about you?
So me, so I'm about the same. I don't remember when I saw the first one. I'm fairly certain I did not see it in the theater, but I did see the second one in the theater. So I probably have a positive review of these movies. Like, they're enjoyable. Like, they're fun and they're stupid. And yep. It requires nothing of me other than to let the light rays hit my eyes. And it's supposed to be that way, right? Like, it's like Dumb and Dumber. It is literally Dumb and Dumber with time travel.
Yep.
And so this series, and it just does not take, it doesn't require anything from me. That's kind of why I enjoy it. And because I've always liked Keanu Reeves, he's always kind of had that special place in my heart from like Point Break and this and all this other stuff. So it's fun. It's just comfort food. That's basically what the series is to me. So, but yeah, all that said, so the third movie came out this past week, and it has a 6.4 on IMDb as it stands right now. It also has an 81% on Rotten Tomatoes and a 66% on Metacritic. Now, one of the things I think is interesting about the Rotten Tomatoes score, this is probably one of the first times where the critic score is higher than the user review score for, like, I don't want to say this kind of movie, but basically this kind of movie where the critic score is an 81% and the audience score is a 79%. I wouldn't expect this to be like, it's not like a Venom situation where you've got, you know, the tomato meter for the critic score being like super, super low and the audience score being very high. They're actually pretty close, but it being as close as they are, I am shocked that it's the critic score that's the higher of the two.
I think this movie, first of all, the past two movies, in addition to the trailers, like, they did not plant any false expectations of what this movie was going to be. So you kind of knew what you were getting into when you saw this movie. Like, I would be surprised if you went into it thinking that you were going to get something different than what you ended up getting. I say that also saying that this movie was a lot dumber than I expected it to be. I don't know. I don't know. They hit it off with a weird note with the joke at the very beginning. Incest, like basically a string of incest jokes right at the beginning that was unexpected and weird, but kind of funny. And it just kind of went downhill from there in terms of sort of the highbrow nature of the jokes.
Yeah,
the highbrow, lowbrow nature of the jokes. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It definitely wasn't for me, though. It definitely wasn't for me. I, like I said, I haven't seen this movie since the 90s or the franchise. And I was like, this is fucking stupid. You know, like, obviously it's trying to be stupid. I'm not under the illusion that it was trying to be anything else other than absolutely dumb. But it just reminded me back when, after The Matrix came out. And so I guess I actually had seen the movie probably in like the early 2000s or late 90s eventually. Cause I remember thinking like, holy crap, I can't believe the guy from Bill and Ted is also Neo. You know, he's like so much, he's like a real actor now, and he was Bill and Ted. And now it's like the reverse, where it's like, fucking, we have John Wick here playing this dumbass, stupid bitch role of this guy. And they didn't change their personalities at all. They didn't tone them down. Like, they're just the same people. It would basically be equivalent if Rey handed off the lightsaber to Luke and Luke just took it and go, okay, let's defeat the new emperor. That's basically what the equivalent of it was. That was this
one wanted.
That's what everyone wanted. That's what this movie was. They were basically locked in a capsule. Almost nothing changed except for the fact that they got a couple of cloned children come out, a couple of cloned kids or daughters, and that's it. You know, obviously life happened, but it didn't change them very much. And I just thought it was it was entertaining to watch, but it was dumb as shit. I would never watch it again. I'd say what, I'm really happy that I didn't spring for the extra $5 to purchase it. I was watching, I was like, whew, I'm really happy I didn't buy this movie. Yeah, it was only $5, but I could do so much with that $5.
I need that $5. Again. Yeah.
Yeah. I need to buy lunch or whatever.
Go get a $5 footlong.
Pretty much.
Is that still a thing?
It's probably like $5.39 or something.
Yeah. Certain ones are, no, I don't think any of them are $5.
Oh. Anyway, what did you guys think? Nick, what did you think of this movie?
I almost want to hear Brandon go first.
Okay, Brandon. I
always know what I think of movies.
Okay.
So
hold on. Stop. Stop. I just realized in the middle of the movie, Kirsten was like, I feel like I need to be high to watch this movie. So actually, usually my limit for when I drink is 2 for an evening. And I had my 2 already before that. And we were watching it and Kirsten was like, I think I need to be high to watch this movie. And I was like, yeah, you're right. I'm going to have a third beer. So I went and had a third beer. I went crazy that night. Had a third beer.
Slow down there, buddy.
I know. Yeah, because I was realized. Yeah, I feel like I would get more enjoyment. I mean, it didn't do anything, but like I feel like I would get a lot more enjoyment out of it if I was high watching this movie. Okay, Brandon, now you can watch. Sorry.
Which is funny because they seem like stoners, but they're not.
Yeah,
That news article.
Yeah. So, what did I think about this? Like, I think I already said it. It's comfort food. It's dumb. It's dumb as shit. And you know the incest joke that you were talking about. Because I remember, I don't want to say fairly well. I have a memory of these movies, and so that incest joke, I was like, yeah, I get that. I get that reference. So,
what was it reference to? Like, did we actually see
the
these
first two movies? Yeah, you what see it. So in the first, so it's exactly as they explained it. So if you had sprung for the extra $5 and watched the movie again, as they describe it, it's what happened in the movies. And I can't remember who was married to who first, but they said it. So in the first one, Missy
was
like married
a babysitter or something, right?
Yes. Yeah. So you don't see that part, but Missy was married to one of their dads. And then in the next movie, she was married to the other dad. And so now in this movie, she was married to one of their brothers. And then one of the dads was sitting there like lamenting and being all sad. But you got to see like all of the dads, both of the dads being sad at the fact that Missy had moved on. That's how stupid that joke was. But I was like, I get that. I get that reference. And so that's one of the things that I like about this movie. Like if you've seen all of them and can kind of remember them, I've seen people saying like, I watched the first two back to back before I watched this.
I thought about doing that. But I didn't.
So there's a scene like when Kid Cudi's like Station and everybody's like Station. I was like, if you haven't seen the second movie or don't remember it, would that mean like you're just like, this is fucking stupid.
Yep.
And so for me, I was like, ha, that's funny. And it made me giggle. and that's why I say it's comfort food. Like it's just it's fattening kit food from when you were a little kid. And you're just like, yep, here's another helping of that shit. And so I would never recommend this movie to anybody who just did not enjoy the first two thoroughly, just for exactly what they were. But there were a couple of issues that I had with it. And this isn't a spoiler, but it ended abrupt as shit.
Oh, yeah. When it ended, I was just like, oh, it's done. Like, it was just like, oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's literally what I did. Yeah. It was like sex. It was like, is it in? Like, are we done? We're done here?
I relate so hard to that comment.
I'm not even going to ask why. I'm not going to take the bait.
Oh, it's because I have a tiny dick.
One of the things I really did like was the use of Jimi Hendrix, because I feel like he gets short shrift in popular media. You see a lot more Elvis and other artists. So I was glad they at least brought him into it.
That guy playing freaking Armstrong. That was a choice. He went all in on that one.
Yeah.
Went all in. All in. It was goofy. Like the movie did not try to exactly what you said. It didn't try to be anything other than what it was. So just enjoy it for what it is.
And the assassin robot. Oh my god, that was a weird character.
So when I said I had problems like that, that's probably my biggest one, because it felt like they were alluding to a thing that they never really, like, how? Because like,
how what? Okay, let's just do spoiler. Who cares? It's a fucking stupid movie. Who cares about the plot?
The question I have is, so they seem to imply that was his, or he was her ex. She was like, huh, that's weird. He named, isn't he talking?
I thought it was just name and not relationship.
Yeah,
you have to talk louder. Say it all one more time, Nick. You have to say it again louder.
I don't think it was her ex. I just think that her mom is kind of like a bitch where she's like, I can't believe you named the robot after my ex.
Yeah, but then he came to heal when she referred to him in that way. And
I don't.
There also seemed to be a moment right when they got to hell when he was like, hey, I'm Dennis. And he was about to say something like, yeah, we don't give a fuck. Like, they cut him off before he said the thing that would have, I think, explained like his deal.
Oh, no. I think he was just going to explain stuff that we already knew about him, to be honest.
They kept cutting him off all along. He wanted to say, look, I have the hard drive right here. That's what it felt like to me. Or like they kept telling him, where I think his next line was going to be like, oh, and here's the song, but you guys won't listen to me. So I never get a chance to tell you that I've had it with me the entire time.
Yeah, I feel like you're trying to give this movie too much credit, Brandon. It's like, oh, these very interesting, intricate character things.
No, okay. So was he really just a robot that they built? And then she was just like, nah, I'm going to name him. Yeah.
Yes.
It is what it was. So. Okay.
Think it is. I think it's all surface level, Brandon. I don't think there's anything below the surface.
Fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Oh, what did you think, Nick? We haven't heard you yet.
Yeah. I was very impressed. Mostly because it could have fallen into the exact same hole as Dumb and Dumber 2 or Jane Silent Bob reboot or any of those movies, where those movies are the same thing, where it's like these characters haven't changed in forever.
They haven't.
Clothes and this following.
You're describing the same movie, Nick. This is the same movie I just described. He was like, oh, it avoided these pitfalls, and you named all the things that I said the movie is.
Yeah, but I think it leaned into all that stuff. And so it worked. Like the other movies are like, oh, this is not actually my Harry and Lloyd, or this is not Jay and Silent Bob anymore. Like they're pretending, they're putting them in the same clothes, but this is the same thing. But I think they worked by leaning into it so hard. And being the older versions of themselves, which I found so enjoyable each time.
You know why I think it worked?
But
I think it worked. I'm sorry. The reason why I think it worked is because with those other movies that you described, there was nothing else, right? They just fucking trotted those people out for no reason. At least with this, there was a purpose and you got to see them fulfill their ultimate destiny that you've known about since 1989. And while, Jammer, you're right, it's super fucking dumb and surface level, you got to see what it meant. And it was, ultimately, you could say, I understand why they made another
one. I do.
Even if you don't like it.
Sure. I mean, like, I'm not going to say it's bad. I'm just going to say it's fucking dumb and stupid. But, like, there was like, a good, it did have a good narrative drive to it. Like, you know, I appreciated the fact that they've been trying for like what 25 years to come up with the song that would unite humanity, and I was like, I felt for these guys a little bit, even though they're really fucking stupid. And then I think it picked up. It was just kind of fun to watch as things picked up and as you kind of followed them and their daughters like gathering people and stuff. And like it was fun, but it was still just so dumb. Like I appreciate the fact that it did fill the need to like. Feel the need to sort of just not update its characters, I guess. I appreciate that, but at the same time, I'm like, I probably objectively would have appreciated it more if they had taken a slightly different, less goofy route. You know, made it more genuine. I think that would have been more interesting, but it probably would have had the capacity to sort of miss the mark because it didn't lean into what made Bill and Ted Bill and Ted. So like, I probably would have liked it more, but you probably wouldn't have, and Nick probably wouldn't have, and it probably wouldn't have had 81% on Rotten Tomatoes. So there's that.
And also, you and I are saying the exact same thing. It is dumb. Dumb but fun means it's a good movie. Like,
if you don't think it's a good movie.
Fun,
no. I don't think you can hear me shaking my head.
No.
Why can't something be dumb and fun means it was an enjoyable watching experience?
No. Saying that it, why can't it be, is not the same thing as one means the other, right?
I don't know what you meant. Like, for me, yeah, of course it was dumb. It's supposed to be dumb. Like, a lot of these movies are Jay and Silent Bob, and both of them are stupid as shit, but they're still
right. And so, what I'm saying is, it's a fallacy to say that that then means that it is a good movie. There are lots of movies that you acknowledge are fun and dumb, but then not good movies.
I don't know. For me, though, of course it's not a good. I don't know. I just think that for me, whenever I judge the quality of the movie, I'm mostly enjoying, did it entertain me? Was it interesting enough? And would I watch it again? And I'm glad I purchased it, because I will absolutely watch this movie again. Hopefully after I'm able to find a place to stream the first two for free.
I didn't care for this movie that much. I mean, it was fun. It was okay to watch. Like, I wasn't sitting there going like, oh my God, this is taking forever. Luckily, so there's that. It wasn't that much of a chore to watch, but I will tell you what, I watched it on Wednesday night. I was thinking to myself, whew, I'm glad I watched Bill and Ted yesterday, because I do not want to watch it today. So
I watched it yesterday and I was having such a good time before even a single beer. But I think another thing, I think why it works better than the other two that I mentioned, that are the similar idea where it's like 20 years later, let's take the same characters and put them back in their old clothes and have them evolve. I like in those movies, they always have a daughter who like doesn't like them. I love that they had two enthusiastic daughters who were like, we're just like our dads. Like, they're so cool. Whereas, like, you know, like in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, she's like, oh, Jay is so lame. Or not Strike Back, but Reboot. And like,
I like, for me,
there's a daughter in Dumb and Dumber too, but I can't remember if we even see enough for her to be like, oh, you're so lame. But I love two enthusiastic daughters who were just like their dads.
In my mind, I was thinking to myself, did the mothers have no influence on these kids? Like, clearly they're just clones of their dads. I just thought it was weird. I like the daughters as characters. I did not like the way they talked. It was just so cartoony. Like, I can get used to Bill and Ted because I've seen them do it before. And actually, it was still actually kind of hard to watch Keanu Reeves do that because he doesn't talk like that. It was just
a serious actor.
Yeah. I mean, Keanu, I guess.
My favorite part.
But it's just so weird. Keanu
ever.
It just felt like, it felt very much like, this is the way a movie felt. It felt like I could easily stop the scene and look around and then just see the people standing on set. Like, it felt very much sort of play it up. Like, it didn't feel real, which is fine. But it was just, I don't know. I feel like I could have played Bill, Ted, or any of the characters equally as convincing as all the actors there. Nah. Because they were so ridiculous that you could just play into it. Yeah, I could do it.
Nah, son. Nah, you get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. Nah.
I'm not casting you in
Bill
anymore, bitch.
Okay. Yeah. It's weird. There were weird little delightful moments for me. Like watching Jimi Hendrix and Mozart have a playoff. It's fun. Mm. Just fun. I can't get by the ending. Nick, what did you think of the ending?
It was fitting for one reason. I mean, obviously it's a time travel movie, so you can go anywhere, but they're like, you have to sing it on this day. It's like, you have to sing it in a couple hours and this many, like, or no, they say the length of the rest of the movie when she's like, you have to do it in like 43 minutes or something, which I loved.
So you're like, saying the end of the movie, the timer is still running and that's why it just cut off like that?
But I only remember the ending is that, like, it just ended, right? Like,
it
saved the world.
It was like a voiceover. It was like
the world. We played the song. Bye.
Yeah. And then directed by the guy.
What do you want? More character development in a movie that doesn't have any? Like,
no. I think that was
crowned heroes or something.
That was almost like a we ran out of film type abrupt ending.
It felt weird.
I didn't even notice. Yeah. So I guess I don't have an opinion about it.
Did you guys. So given that one of you doesn't have that much affinity for the first flicks, what did you think of the George Carlin tribute?
Oh, cool. Yeah, that was good.
I forgot he was in the first movie until they did that. I didn't remember who played Rufus until they did that moment. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's in the first two.
I haven't seen the second. I haven't seen the first one since like late 90s, early 2000s. That's what I'm saying. Like, I knew enough. All I remember is that in the first one, the only one I remember that they pick up Genghis Khan and Abraham Lincoln, because that's all I remember about the first movie.
Yeah, so the first one is the history project, so they have to get all those folks.
The second one, I guess I gathered from this, they go to heaven and hell in the second one because of a piece of dialogue in this movie said that.
Yeah. So that's where they went to get death from.
And I assume between the movies, it sounded like. Like he was probably in their band at the end of the movie is what it felt like. And then they were talking about their history in between.
So maybe that's part of why this ending feels so abrupt to me. Like, well, it feels abrupt to Jammer too, but part of the reason why it feels so abrupt to me is because at the end of the second one, you get this long post-credits, like news stories about what's happening with the band. So you get to see that entire career, even up to the point where they're having that conversation.
Oh, really?
So while it didn't happen in the movie, you know that it happened. You knew that they fell out. You knew that the band broke up. And you knew that at some point he rejoins the band. So it's weird to know all of that stuff and then see this happen. And I was curious how they were going to get around that. And it was just like, yeah, this is the part after that.
I think, I don't know, they fulfilled their destiny. The end, we don't even need another sequel because that was what we came back to do. Like, there's no, I mean, this is the thing they've been talking about for 25 years. So, like, what's their mission going to be in a fourth one, even if this makes $1 billion?
Yeah. You never know. I'm not dissatisfied with what we got. What do you guys think?
Cool.
I liked it. Yeah.
I think I've Bill and Ted-ed myself out in about 20 minutes, even of which I probably spoke for about 5 minutes. So, I think that goes to show what I have to say about this movie.
Last thing I'll add, though, is I am glad that the explanation for the song is not that it was the song, like it was a song that you could basically play, but it was the idea that they were able to get everyone together to play a song. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't the quality. It was just the resonance across the different universes.
Otherwise, it's D, and it's like, we forgot the greatest song in the world. You know, this is a trip.
Yeah.
Like you have to deliver like the greatest song that you've at least heard in the franchise. But it's like, no, it's less about the song. Yeah. I like that too.
Yeah. Yep. So I like that. And that, again, that kind of is one of the things that fed into my satisfaction with them making a sequel. You're just like, you get to see the why. So yeah, that's it.
Cool. Good stuff.
Yeah. You guys all done with Bill and Ted?
All done. I think we tend to transition to who watches the watchers.
Who watches? You want to do who watches?
Sure. Right. I watched a couple things. I watched Agretzko season 3. It's fucking awesome. If you like Agretzko season 1 and 2, it's fantastic.
It's dark.
It's dark. Especially the end. The last 2 episodes, I think. Shit gets really dark. But I also like it because I always like entrepreneurial type stuff. And I feel like this one scratched that itch where she becomes involved in an idol group, and it's about them rising through the ranks and sort of making money and stuff. And I was like, I like this stuff. So it was good on that level as well. So yeah, it continues to be an awesome show. If you haven't seen it, it's basically a show about it's created from the Hello Kitty guy, Sanrio. And they have this cute little character, red panda character. It's like basically an animal world. And she works as a salary woman in an office, and it's about how she's underappreciated and sort of the facing the daily grind. And she gets her aggression out by singing death metal karaoke at nights. And yeah, that's pretty much the show. And it's awesome. It definitely speaks to the millennial generation, you know, just going in and clocking in, clocking out, and sort of the pitfalls of that sort of society, that sort of cog driven society. And so have you seen it, Nick, at all? I know you've seen it, Brandon. I
haven't heard of it until last year. Is it anime, I assume, then?
Yeah.
Okay. No, I never heard of it until you guys were talking about last week.
You should watch it. They're 13 minute episodes. They're really short. They're really short episodes, like 13 minutes. So you could just crank through them really quickly. Brandon.
Always is coming out this weekend, so I have more important things to watch.
Okay. Well, Brandon, what do you have to say about it?
About the show? No, I enjoyed it a lot. The thing that I said when you were talking is that it got super dark. It's probably my biggest contribution. It's still funny. I don't understand. I mean, maybe the brevity is the thing that makes it work, right? Because it keeps it fun, it keeps it engaging. And because there are only 15 minute episodes, you're just like, nope, I got to see what happens next. And so you just keep on watching. I literally I think we burned through that in one day.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm sad again.
Yeah, I burned through it too.
I could probably do that.
What's that, Nick?
That sells me more on it, that short episode.
No, yeah, seriously. Like I said, 13-minute episodes. Each season is like 2.5 hours or something like that. Tops.
Yeah.
It's like watching a movie. And I also watched, you mentioned this last week, Nick, Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus. It's with Jason Sudeikis. He plays an NFL coach. Is it NFL? It's either NFL or it's a college team. I don't remember. An American football coach gets brought to the UK to coach soccer. And it's actually based on like NBC Premier League skit from like 2012, where it makes fun of this guy, football coach. He goes to the UK and has to coach soccer because he doesn't know anything about the sport. It's literally based on that skit, but it's really good. It's basically, I mentioned this before, it's basically Paddington, or it's like basically the trope is it's the static main character, because usually in a good story you want the main character to be, you know, someone who grows, right? Who kind of rises to the occasion in some way and learns a lot. Whereas this is a show about a static character who changes everyone around him. And it's just this really warm-hearted guy who likes to bring the best out of people. And it's about him changing all like the cynical people all around him and sort of helping this team unite to become genuinely good. And it has less to do about the actual coaching, the actual like sports part of it, and more with just the human being part of it. And I just really like it. Like, I want to live my life like Ted Lasso. Like, I want to be that guy who like brings the best out of everybody, who learns to appeal to everyone's human side and just is able to recognize what makes them innately special and human. And I just thought it was really good. It's a great heartwarming show. Like, you go into it thinking it's going to be like awkward, where it's like, he's like a Michael Scott maybe type character who tries to do stuff, but is incompetent, but he's not. Like, he knows when he doesn't know things, but he's able to sort of make things work in his own way. And it's a great show. Finally, I watched Mulan, on Disney Plus, and, it's okay.
How much can you say about it?
I can say anything I want because the embargo lifted.
Oh, nice. So how does it compare to the cartoon?
It's very different, which I think is good, but it also left me feeling a bit hollow inside. I think it has a lot of great things, but I think that it's less, what was it? What is that expression? It is less than the sum of its parts. I think Mulan herself doesn't really grab me as a character. She doesn't really drive the plot. She kind of just lingers. She's one of the least interesting parts of it until like near the end. They have a lot of great moments. It's very beautiful to watch. The choreography is great. Just, it feels awesome, but something about it just didn't work for me at a core level, at a character level. I just didn't feel engaged with any of the characters. So at the end of it, it was fine. I appreciate what it did. I appreciated that it was very different from the cartoon, but it kind of just felt vanilla and bland and fine. But if you want to watch it, like, I really am disappointed that Disney, this was the one that was like, oh, they're going to be able to make this one work because it's going to be so different. And that's true. It is different, but it just didn't connect with me. And it makes me sad. But I
any magic?
What's that?
Magic. Did they strip that?
No, there's magic.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, there's magic in it. So yeah, like, it does a lot of stuff right, but at the end of the day, what matters to me most in this is sort of like the character stuff, and they just didn't land that as well. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's a competent movie, and I think it's entertaining enough, but I don't think it's a classic. But I think you should watch it. If you're remotely interested in watching it, don't listen to me. I feel like this might be a thing where it's like some people enjoy it and some people don't. I'm kind of in the middle, but I just... Yeah, I think you should give it a shot if you're remotely interested. Just watch it yourself and come to your own conclusion. Don't let me sway you. Yeah. Any questions you guys have?
I was waiting to see. I was waiting to see if Nick had any questions, because I feel like I could ask you questions about this movie all day long.
I feel like we should do it next week. But we can.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, we can talk about it next week. You heard my review, though. Let's hear your guys' review next week.
Yeah, we can all. Then you can talk sport. Oh, Jesus. You can talk spoilers next
week. Okay. Sounds good.
Works for me.
All right. I rewatched most of Harley Quinn because I was in the cab with my friends who hadn't seen it yet. And it's so much funnier the second. You just catch more jokes the second time, like any well-written show. Like, there's so much more Batman. I mean, just DC, like, you know, Easter eggs. I mean, it's a show about DC, but there's so much more to it the second time, I feel like. The only thing new I watched was episodes of Shark Tank from 5 years ago that I hadn't seen yet. And the only comment about that is at the beginning of season 6, I think. I don't think he's a regular all season, but Ashton Kutcher's in the first episode as an investor. And it both annoyed me and gave me great joy at the same time, because I do not like Ashton Kutcher. But for some reason, it was very intriguing watching someone who's an actor with no investment ability just be on there and have comments. And like, it almost seemed like all the other sharks rolled their eyes at him because he's a young actor and they're like old investors. So that's all I got. I didn't even watch Lovecraft Country episode 3 yet.
I didn't either.
I was on vacation.
I didn't either, yeah. What about you, Brandon?
I think Agretzko is the only thing that I watched. I'm still reading Lovecraft Country. So my watching has been pretty tame lately.
Okay.
Super boring. Super tame. Unfortunately.
Super boring and tame, yeah. Like my sex life. But I'm bummed.
Oh,
anyway. Between your small penis and your boring sex life, this podcast is just full of little nuggets.
Yeah, a little nuggets indeed. Like my penis. Anyways, next.
I think that's it. That's the wrap up. We're going to close on that, apparently, I guess.
Okay.
All right. Well, dear listener, if you like what you heard, do all the socials, like, rate, subscribe. We would certainly appreciate. Also, visit LRMonline.com where you can get other great podcasts for your listening pleasure, as well as other great news from the entertainment industry. Jammer, where can you get
the podcast? You find me. Wow, I had like a mini stroke there.
It's a bit bad.
Like our president. Anyway.
What? He didn't have any mini strokes. No one asked you about your mini strokes.
Oh, right. Oh, my bad. You can find me on Twitter at JamTheWriter, all of my entertainment stuff at LRMonline.com, and then all of my novels under the name AJ Serna on Audible and Amazon.
And Nick Dahl.
All right. I'm at LRM _ Nick. I write Come At Me Bro for LRMonline.com most weeks, though. Anthony Estevez.
He's not. Me. It's actually a Steve's.
A Steve's?
A Steve's. He's a Portuguese, I think he's
a. Okay.
We'll talk after. He's not covering this week, but I'll talk to you after.
Oh, shit. Okay.
No,
okay.
That's not a you problem. Honestly, it's not a you problem for this time.
I'll talk after the show. But
okay. Do you want to do that? Do you want to do that again?
No, it's fine. We'll talk about it. But and I've just lost. Okay, I did.
That's what I'm saying. Do you want to do it again?
Yeah, I usually write it. I was just on vacation this week, because I alluded to earlier. I'm also on this podcast, and I think I will be on the next Trivia Gauntlet of Doom,
yes.
Depending on if I can find a cord to get my microphone to fucking work better.
It's working good now.
Okay, good.
I mean, good enough. No? You're shaking your head? All right, well, maybe.
Yeah, no, there are definitely times when I can tell Nick is talking. Like, if I don't have the video up to see
sure.
Nick is talking, I will hear, like, a snap of something. I can see him doing this on the microphone. I'm like... Nicholas definitely trying to talk.
After this, I'm going to the store and see if it's hopefully it's just the cord, because I can't afford a new.
Looks like a fish. Looks like a fish trying to get air. Give me some flakes.
I have seen the like. Anyway, this is not a good audio content. So
we should what? It's fantastic. And you can find me right here on Breaking Geek Radio, the podcast, as well as Twitter at Sir Jonesiest, and contributing to the website. Folks, as always, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Hasta lasagna.
Don't get any on ya.
Honestly, I think they got the right idea over in Japan. They just kill them all, no questions asked.
The fuck? You're just gonna have to say cut the check, which you can't say anymore, because Altered Carbon has been canceled, even though it's not Altered Carbon, but it's Anthony Mackie, and now I'm sad.
I was just reading. I have a manga sitting here, and I was like, I'll just read a random line very poorly.
That's going to be your thing. You have to clear your throat next time. But...